Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again this week for our conversation. We're going to be talking with Sal Mondelli. He is an experienced CEO, has worked in technology and financial services and also in the not-for-profit world, and has a great background and has served on a number of boards, both not-for-profit as well as corporate boards over the years, and worked most recently as an executive coach. He works with boards and CEOs. It's his encore career. He has a master's of science from UCLA, and an undergraduate degree from the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis. Sal has some great things to share with us today. Looking forward to our conversation. Yeah, we've known each other for a number of years. And I guess, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your background and your career?
Sure. Thanks, Mark. And I appreciate you inviting me to be on your podcast.
Absolutely.
I looked at some of the other ones, and there's a lot of really terrific people there. So I'm happy to be part of that group. Yeah, I describe myself as I have a rather eclectic background. So I spent 5 years as a naval officer, all of it in San Diego, which I know was tough duty. Somebody had to do it.
Yep.
And I was glad to do that. And then I left the Navy after we had our first child. And, you know, I didn't want to be a part-time husband and father. So I joined IBM, spent 15 years there, actually moved around quite a bit, five times in 10 years, starting out as a salesman, as everybody did. And worked my way up through, you know, first line manager, second line manager, and then I became a business unit executive, ran a couple $100 million operation, then a $600 million operation here in town. It was very gratifying, really learned a lot, worked with a lot of great people, and got a chance to be in boardrooms and meet a lot of large customers. And then when they wanted me to move for the sixth time, my wife and I decided we weren't going to do that again, and left and started another 15-year career working with small and growing technology companies, hardware, software, services, some combination of all three, and did everything from startups, early stage companies, startups with no revenue, to mid-sized companies, grew one to $40 million and sold it, and then did some turnarounds with some friends and some other companies in Wisconsin. So I really enjoyed everything I did there. And I found that everything I did helped me prepare for the next step on the ladder. And I was fortunate to, you know, be CEO of a couple of different companies. And during that time, I spent 25 years working as a not-for-profit board member. And then I spent the last 5 years of my full-time working career running a not-for-profit in Burnsville, where I live. And that was a great experience also. Again, all the things I had done previously had helped me in that environment. And now I work part-time, 2-3 days a week as an executive coach and consultant for the Bailey Group. And I work with boards and CEOs and people who want to be CEOs. And I'm living the dream.
Well, Sal, tell us just a little bit as far as you made the move from a corporate position to a nonprofit or not-for-profit. And what were some of the lessons that you learned making that transition, and kind of what was that like?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mark, because if you'd asked me a couple of years before that, if I would be running a not-for-profit or told me that, I'd said you're crazy. And I was a tech guy, startup guy, big company guy, but the opportunity came along and I really had a hard time saying I didn't want to do this. And I was viewed as a non-traditional candidate, because this was a social services area where we had food shelves and battered women's shelters and school programs. But it turned out, in talking to the recruiter and the board members, which I knew, they really need someone with leadership skills. And you find that they really have a need in most of, especially social services area, for just business acumen. And not that people coming up through the ranks in social services don't get that. You just don't have a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it really was a repositioning, and I got to spend most of my time working with funders and people in the business community, as well as people on the boards of education and superintendents and mayors and council members and police chiefs. And really, that fact that I had a background and people knew if I gave you a dollar, you were going to use it wisely and not just be a quote do-gooder, which is not a bad thing, but we had a mission that was both grounded in bottom line financial as well as bottom line impact in the community. Mm.
So how important is it for someone going in? A lot of times people are saying they're kind of that next stage of their career that they would like to kind of give back and to be involved in a not-for-profit organization. I think, being on a board, do you think that helped you as far as to understand how a not-for-profit runs?
There's no question about that, because I was on about 8 different boards of all different sizes and different areas, arts, entertainment, YMCA, Make-A-Wish, et cetera. But that helped a lot because I had a perspective that most people coming up through the ranks would not have. That I think if you're a business executive, there's a couple of fallacies that you have to get over. One is, hey, it's going to be easy and I won't work as hard as I did in the corporate world. And that's just total bunk. You actually work as hard or maybe harder and you just get paid about half as much. So you really got to go into it with eyes open. But I think the other thing is you're not there to help make the decisions. You're there to help guide people. Mm-hmm. And I followed somebody who had a tough time and I listened to all that. And I said, why did you all stay? And the answer was universally, they were so committed to the mission. And that's what there's people that know how to do whatever it is you're doing. And you just got to help enable them to do it. And you'll be a servant leader and help put some processes in place, like, you know, strategic planning and let's look at how we're going to spend our dollars and when should we hire somebody and are we in the right areas that make sense, and ask the generative questions that if we went away, what would the impact in the community be? And those kinds of things that don't normally get asked by somebody coming into a not-for-profit. That was my learning. And the other thing I learned is that these social issues were much deeper seated than I ever thought. I mean, I knew about it. And it's not just a certain ethnic group in a certain part of town. These problems are widespread, and they're in your neighborhood. Your kids and grandkids go to school with people with those problems, and you probably sit next to them in your house of worship, and you just don't know. Mm.
So as you moved into the not-for-profit role, coming in, was there a difference as far as in how to work with, setting the culture of the organization, or how did you make an impact as far as on the organization? Was it in good shape when you got there, or were you able to kind of reshape things?
I would categorize my situation, and they're all different. It was much more a repositioning of the organization. There have been some severe losses in the previous couple of years, some bad press. So my number one job was to look at the organization as you would in any turnaround kind of situation, decide what's the most important things to do and focus on the 1, 2, or 3 things that need to get done. But I spent a lot of time in the community, and that's what a not-for-profit needs. Even as a board member, part of your role is to help with fundraising, and that's a big, big piece. So if that's not something that you enjoy doing, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great people who contribute a lot to not-for-profits. They just don't like to do the ask. That's right. Probably a role that you should take a hard look at.
So I have to ask this question, which I ask of every CEO person that comes on, is if you were looking back over your career and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give a Sal at age 22?
Yeah, I'd like to look at that picture. I have more hair.
it would be darker. That was like just a couple of years ago. Come on.
Well, you know, I think the things that I learned along the way that probably would have benefited earlier on is trust your instincts. Go in areas that will help you grow as a person where you can make an impact. I don't necessarily say, like I said, I had that eclectic background. I didn't necessarily have an idea that I was going to spend 15 years at IBM or 15 years at a series of other companies or end up with a not-for-profit or be an executive coach. Opportunities came my way based on the things I had done previously. And I was in a position to take advantage of those. You know, it's the old Woody Allen, 90% of life is showing up. So you have to be ready, willing, and able, and then take advantage of those. You get an opportunity, and it's up to you what you do with them. Don't be afraid to take some chances.
So what was your first job that you ever had? Going back to when you were the first paycheck you got, what were you doing?
Oh, boy. I grew up in a beach resort at the Jersey Shore called Wildwood, New Jersey, 5-mile by 1-mile island. And paycheck, I probably worked at a putt-putt golf course. But I sold newspapers on the beach. I shined shoes in my father's barber shop. I mean, everybody growing up when you were a teenager or a preteen had money in their pocket because you worked doing different things. Worked on the boardwalk, and probably the first job I had that had a paycheck was that putt-putt golf course, because all the rest of them were before I was 13 or 14 years old, before you could be officially work.
Yeah, I was just thinking about my first time I got paid, and that was walking beans in Iowa. So that was a fun experience. And a lot of people don't know what walking beans are. It's pulling weeds out of bean fields. So a lot of fun. Tell us a little bit about, you've been doing some coaching of executives and working with boards. Having been a CEO and now coaching CEOs and board members, anything that you've learned in the last few years doing the consulting side that has been surprising to you?
Yeah, I think if the two words come to mind when I talk about coaching, one is perspective and an accountability partner, because I think that's the main thing. If you're a first-time CEO, or you've been a CEO for a while and you've had experienced explosive growth, or the other direction, you're experiencing problems, you need somebody that's got some other perspective, so you're not trying to jump out the basement window because you're so frustrated. So one example is I was coaching somebody who was a candidate to be a CEO of a $1 billion company, and he said, "Gosh, I look around at some of the competitors, and I'm not sure I fit that mold. I'm not sure this is the right job for me." So I had to tell him, "Look, you can talk to me about that and your spouse, but let's talk about what that really means and where you're strong and where you're not. And if you truly don't believe that you're the candidate, then you should walk away." And he refers to that as the time Sal talked me off the ledge. And I really didn't talk him off the ledge as much as give him some things to think about and allay his fears. And the other thing about it is the accountability is when you're the idea that when you sit in that seat as a CEO, it's a lonely spot. It is really true. And people who've done that will tell you, because sometimes there's things you just are wrestling with that maybe your spouse can help you with or cares about. Maybe you have some good friends, but maybe you don't want to talk to your board members about it. But you need somebody else to bounce this off. And that's where the perspective helps. And then as a coach, I'm going to come back to you the next time we talk and say, "You said you were going to do these three things. Did you do them? If not, why not? And when are you going to do them? And I'm not going to let you off the hook." So I think both of those things work really well in the coaching perspective. And what we try to do from an ROI is to help get the person up to speed quicker so that the ROI to the company can be realized sooner.
So thinking about mentors in your life and people that have made an impact on you, who are some of the people that you think of that have really influenced you in your career?
How much time do we have? Yeah.
Top three.
There's a number. First boss I had in the Navy on the ship, the department head, taught me about the 7 P's, proper prior planning prevents piss poor performance. That was a big deal. I also learned about attention to detail early on in my career. And I worked for a gentleman three times, different times in IBM over a 10-year period. And he really taught me about how you take care of the clients, how you take care of the people, and you know just what it is to be a business executive and think at a higher level, and it really helps with the coaching thing too, because as you move up the ladder, the things that got you to be successful in the previous job won't help you be successful at the top rung. And the last thing that somebody taught me early on is, as CEO, you're not there to know all the answers. You're the person that has all the questions. And you got to make sure you understand the questions and make sure that somebody else has the answers to them, because you're used to, at the lower level, having the answers. And that's not what you're there to do.
So what are a few of your favorite questions to ask when you're trying to figure out what the issues are?
Well, I think it really goes around, have you framed up the problem correctly? You know, why is this a problem? What happens if we don't do anything? Because there's a cost of doing nothing, and sometimes there's a positive. What alternatives have you looked at? Has anybody else done this before? And if we don't do anything now, how will that affect you? Or especially from a customer perspective, if somebody comes in with a problem with something we've done, it's, have you owned up to it? Is it really our fault? Or can we go back and talk to the customer about, well, wait a minute, one of your people really screwed this up. And I've had those situations during my career, and it's not pleasant to tell a CEO, your CFO only gave you half the story. Mm-hmm. Here's the rest of the story, and I'll let you decide who's right and who's wrong. So being honest is always a good policy. Sometimes people don't like that, but I find it easier to sleep at night.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about just some of the books that you've read over the years that have impacted you, and some that you maybe recommend to others that you think would be a good read for somebody that's a up-and-coming leader or somebody that is in a CEO position.
Yeah, you know, I've never been asked that question before. I've heard people say, sometimes people will say in job interviews, what's the last 3 or 5 books that you read, to find out if people actually do read? But I think there's a couple, and I tend to like history and biographies and military things just based on my background. But, mm-hmm. you know, anything by Tom Clancy, but I really liked his first one, The Hunt for Red October, when I'm a Navy guy. But I think encapsulated in that, not just the military aspect, but it's really a book about strategy and thinking ahead multiple steps. And in this case, knowing your adversary, like it's knowing your competition in the business world, and taking some risks. And they're all good things, not only for military, but for business and for life. Second one is a biography of a hero of mine, St. Thomas More, who was the Chancellor of England for Henry VIII. And you know the story about how that's when they broke from the Catholic Church, formed their own church. And Henry opposed that because he had strong faith, and he cost him his life. But he's a man of integrity, and he stood up. And he's really an example of how to tell the truth to power. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for him personally. But I think it's somebody who sticks to what you believe in and don't back down from it. And the last one, in my mind, would have to be the Bible, which is a pretty good roadmap for how do you live your life. And it's always daunting to go back and look at things that happened 2, 3, 4,000 years ago and are still relevant today and in my life and your life, and how you have a life of faith and believe it. And, you know, some people don't like to talk about that in public, but I think it's part of who you are, and people should know about that because that's why they should trust you.
That's good. So if you were thinking back to when you put together your first executive team, were there some mistakes that you made when you first started hiring those senior team members? And what advice would you give somebody putting together their first team?
Yeah, you know, the first time you do anything, it is it's daunting. But if you go back to one of the things I learned in my career was, as a CEO, you're really responsible for 3 things: setting the strategy, second, hiring the people to implement the strategy, and coaching them and firing them if they don't. And the third thing is the culture. So getting the right people on the bus and then the right seats is really an important thing to do. I think early on, I probably did, like anybody else, you wring your hands a little bit more, maybe maybe didn't make the right decisions, or did it based on gut feel versus looking for something more tangible. So I think the advice I give now when I coach people is you got to start out with a strategy, where it is you want to take this organization in the next 3 to 5 years, what skills, experiences, and perspectives do you need to get to the next level? Because growth is stair-step, not linear. And you got to look for somebody that's been there where you're going, maybe somebody that's got more experience than you, somebody smarter than you, and not be afraid to hire them. So you got to map the skills and the person against the strategy. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't do. I know I didn't do that early on.
So if you were thinking about, if you were to make some of those decisions again, who would be the first person that you would hire if you were starting in a startup? You're the CEO. Who would you hire first? What position?
Well, so go to technology. You assume there's some people doing software or hardware kind of development. So let's put the product thing aside. There's two positions that I feel are very, very important at any stage of the company. And that's a good person with HR background that can help you put all those processes and procedures in place, as well as help you with the hiring, and a good financial person. Because I always look for somebody who would tell me what I needed to know, not what I wanted to hear. And I've run into those people in the financial area that will tell you what you want to hear, and you find out too late that they're jobbing you and you got to get rid of them. But they're the two roles that I always valued highly and made sure I spent a lot of time on that. Getting a financial and an HR executive that can think strategically along with you as CEO are invaluable.
So what outside of work, Sal, what do you do to recharge?
Yeah, you need to find some kind of outlets. I played tennis for a lot of years, and then when the knees decided they weren't good enough to do that anymore, I got into biking and longer distance biking, and did the Ragbi ride across Iowa with my daughter and son-in-law, and had a great time doing that. I still do that a lot. I'm an occasional golfer, but getting away and just sometimes just walking for 20 or 30 minutes. Even when I was working full time, sometimes I just get up and go out and walk around the office as well outside, just to kind of get a breath of fresh air. And that goes back to my days in the Navy on the ship. A couple, 3 times a day, I just get out of my stateroom or office and go walk the deck and talk to people. And I found that the same thing happened in the business world. Invariably, somebody you talk to in the first 2-3 minutes of that walk gave you an insight that 5-10 minutes later, when you talk to somebody else, you were able to answer that question or help somebody out that you wouldn't have had that perspective. So it's a matter of being, getting showing up and listening and paying attention.
That's good. What parting advice would you give someone as they're starting out in their career?
Yeah, actually, it's advice that was given to me by a recruiter. Somebody, I think I was still working for IBM at the time, flew me into Chicago, and we spent an hour or two together. And at the end of that time, he said to me, "Sal, here's your lane. You could do smaller companies or bigger companies, but you're in this like $20 to $250 million range of a company." And he said, "The reason is you impress me as somebody who likes being closer to the action. And you don't want to have 3 levels between you and the customer or somebody in development or somebody in the shop floor, et cetera." And if I look back at my career, that's very true. Now, I could have done some other things, but knowing your lane is very important, because something somebody else told me was, don't feel bad about not getting the job you really didn't want. And it's not about capabilities or smarts or anything like that. It's just what really gives you the most joy and what really floats your boat and things. And I like being in an area where I can move the needle. And so I think that I don't think people understand that. Otherwise, you wouldn't have so many people fail at certain things. It wasn't because they weren't good enough. It just wasn't a thing that charged them up.
It's good. Good advice. Well, Sal, it's been fun talking with you, and I understand this is your encore career as you're working with the Bailey Group and helping CEOs and enjoying your life. And so it's always fun to catch up with you and appreciate your thoughts and insights, and look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah. Likewise, Mark, I appreciate you inviting me on, and I really had a great time, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.